dumb. It was a word you used as a kid, but it was the best way to describe Runner. Wily and dumb at the same time. Magda and the Kill Club would be disappointed, although I'd be happy to give them his address if they wanted to continue the conversation. Me? I hoped he'd die soon. I passed a thick, flat, brown earth field, a teenage boy leaning against a fence in the rain, in the dark, sulky or bored, staring out at the highway. My brain returned to Ben. Deandra and Ben. Pregnant. Everything else Ben told me about that night felt right, believable. But the lie, the insistent lie about Deandra, that seemed like something to worry about. I sped home, feeling contaminated. I went straight to the shower and scrubbed myself, Silkwood style, with a hard nail brush, my skin looking like I'd been attacked by a pack of cats when I was done. I got into bed still feeling infected, fussed around in the sheets for an hour, then got up and showered again. Around 2 a.m., I fell into a sweaty, heavy sleep filled with leering old men I thought were my father until I got close enough to see their faces melt. More potent nightmares followed. Michelle was cooking pancakes, and grasshoppers were floating in the batter, their twig legs snapping off as Michelle stirred. They got cooked into the pancakes, and my mom made us eat them anyway. Good protein, crunch, crackle. Then we all started dying, choking, slobbering, eyes floating back in our heads, because the grasshoppers were poisoned. I swallowed one of the big insects and felt it fight its way back up my throat, its sticky body surfacing in my mouth, squirting my tongue with tobacco, pushing its head against my teeth to escape. The morning dawned an unimpressive gray. I showered again, my skin still feeling suspicious, and then drove to the downtown public library, a white pillared building that used to be a bank. I sat next to a pungent man with a matted beard and a stained army jacket, the guy I always end up next to in public places, and finally got on the internet. I found the massive, sad, missing persons database and entered her name. The screen made its churning, thinking sound, and I sweated while hoping a no-data screen would come up. No such luck. The photo was different from the yearbook, but not too. Deandra with the moose-hard curls and the cresting bangs, charcoal eyeliner, and pink lip gloss. She was smiling, just the tiniest bit, pouting her lips out. Deandra Sue Wurzner, born October 28, 1967. Reported missing, January 21st, 1985. Ben was waiting for me again, this time with his arms crossed, leaned back in the chair, belligerent. He'd given me the silent treatment a week before granting my request to see him. Now he shook his head at me when I sat down. It threw me off.
"You know, Libby, I've been thinking since we talked last," he finally said. "I've been thinking I don't need this pain. I mean, I'm already in here. I don't really need my little sister to show up, believe in me, don't believe in me, ask me weird questions, put me on the guard after goddamn 24 years. I don't need the tension. So if you're coming here, trying to get to the bottom of things," he made angry air quotes, "you know, go somewhere else, because I just don't need it."
I found Runner. He didn't stand up. He stayed solid in his chair, then gave me a sigh, a might-as-well sigh.
"Well, Libby, you missed your calling as a detective. What did Runner have to say? He's still in Oklahoma?"
I felt an inappropriate twitch of a smile. "He's at a Superfund dump on the edge of Lidgerwood. Got turned out from the group home." Ben grinned at that.
"He's living in a toxic waste dump."
"Huh. He says Deandra Wurzner was your girlfriend, that you got her pregnant, that she was pregnant and you two were together the night of the murders." Ben put a hand over his face, his fingers splayed. I could see his eyes blink through them. He talked with his face still covered, and I couldn't hear what he said. He tried twice, me asking each time what he was saying, and on the third try he pulled his head up, chewing on the inside of his cheek, and leaned in.
I said, "What the fuck is your obsession with Deandra? You got a goddamn bee in your bonnet about this, and you know what's going to happen. You're going to fuck all this up. You had a chance to believe in me, to do the right thing, and finally believe in your brother, who you know. Don't say you don't, because that's a lie. I mean, don't you get it, Libby? It's the last chance for us. The world can believe I'm guilty, believe I'm innocent. We both know I'm not going anywhere. There's no DNA gonna release me. There's no goddamn house anymore. So, I'm not getting out. So the only person I care to say they know I couldn't have murdered my family is you. You can't blame me for wondering whether—
Of course I can! Of course I can!
I can blame you for not believing in me. Now, I can forgive you for your lie, for getting confused as a kid. I can forgive that. But God damn it, Libby, what about now? You're what, 30-some years old and still believe your own blood could do something like that?
Oh, I totally believe my own blood could do that, I said, my anger surging up, bumping against my ribs. I totally believe our blood is bad. I feel it in me. I've beaten the shit out of people, Ben. Me. I've busted in doors and windows, and I've killed things. Half the time I look down, my hands are in fists.
You believe we're that bad?
I do.
Even with Mom's blood?
Even with.
Well, I'm sad for you, little girl.
Where is Deandra?
Let it go, Libby.
What did you do with the baby?
I felt queasy, fevered.
If the baby had lived, it'd be, he'd be, she'd be, what, 24 years old. The baby wasn't a baby anymore. I tried to picture an adult, but my brain kept bouncing back an image of a blanket-swaddled infant. But hell, I could barely picture me as an adult. My next birthday I'll be 32, my mom's age when she was killed. She'd seemed so grown up. More grown up than I'd ever be. So if it was alive, the baby was 24. I had one of my awful visions, a might-have-been vision. Us, if everyone had lived, at home in Kinnicky. There's Michelle in the living room, still fiddling with her oversized glasses, bossing around a bundle of kids who roll their eyes at her, but do what they're told. Debbie, chubby and chattery, with a big blonde farmer husband and a special room in her own farmhouse for crafts, packed with sewing ribbons and quilting patches and glue guns. My mom, ripe 50s and sunbaggy, her hair mostly white, still bickering pleasantly with Diane. And into the room comes Ben's kid, a daughter, a redhead, a girl in her 20s, thin and assured, bangly bracelets on delicate wrists, a college graduate who doesn't take any of us seriously. A day girl. I choked on my own spit, started coughing, my windpipe shut down. The visitor, two booths down from me, leaned out to look and then, deciding I wasn't going to die, went back to her son. What happened that night, Ben? I need to know. I just need to know.
Libby, you can't win this game. I tell you I'm innocent, that means you're guilty. You ruined my life. I tell you I'm guilty. I don't think that makes you feel much better, does it?
He was right. It was one reason I'd stayed immobile for so many years. I threw something else out. And what about Trey Tupano?
Trey Tupano.
I know he was a bookie, and that he was into devil shit, and that he was a friend of yours, and he was with you that night, with Deandra. That all seems pretty fucked up.
Where'd you get all that?
Ben looked me in the eye, then raised his gaze up, gave a long stare at my red roots that were to my ears now. Dad told me. He said he owed Trey Tupano money and—
Dad? He's Dad now?
Runner said,
fuck all. You need to grow up, Libby. You need to pick a side. You can spend the rest of your life trying to figure out what happened, trying to reason, or you can just trust yourself. Pick a side. Be on mine. It's better.
Ben Day, January 2, 1985, 10:23 p.m. They drove out past the edge of town, the road going from cement to dirt, Ben rattling around in the back seat, hands pressed up against the top of the truck, trying to stay in place. He was stoned, real stoned, and his teeth and head rattled. "You got a screw loose?" He had two or three loose. He wanted to sleep. Eat first, then sleep. He watched the lights of Kinnickee fade away, and then it was miles of glowing blue snow, a patch of grass here, a jagged scar of fence there, but mostly snow like the surface of the moon. Like he really was in outer space, on another planet, and he wasn't going home. Ever. They turned down some road, trees sucking them in, tunnel-like on all sides, and he realized he had no idea where they were. He just hoped whatever was about to happen was over soon. He wanted a hamburger. His mom made crazy hamburgers, called them kitchen sinkers, fattened up cheap ground meat with onions and macaroni and whatever else crap was about to go bad. One time he swore he found part of a banana, glopped over with ketchup. His mom thought ketchup made everything okay. It didn't. Her cooking sucked, but he'd eat one of those hamburgers right now. He was thinking, "I'm so hungry I could eat a cow." And then, as if his food prayer worked, he refocused his eyes from a gritty stain on the back seat to the outside, and there were 10 or 20 Herefords standing in the snow for no reason. There was a barn nearby, but no sign of a house, and the cows were too dumb to walk back into the barn, so they stood like a bunch of fat assholes, blowing steam from their nostrils. Herefords were the ugliest cows around, giant, rusty, with white crinkled faces and pink-rimmed eyes. Jersey cows were sort of sweet-looking. They had those big deer faces. But Herefords looked prehistoric, belligerent, mean. The things had furry, thick wattles and curvy, sharp horns, and when Trey pulled to a stop, Ben felt a flurry of nerves. Something bad was going to happen. "We're here," Trey said as they sat in the car, the heater turned off, the cold creeping in. "All out." Trey reached over Deandra into the glove compartment, here grazing Deandra's baby belly, them both giving weird smiles again, grabbed a cassette and popped it in the deck. The frenetic zigzag music started scribbling on Ben's brain. "Come on, Ben," Trey said, crunching down on the snow. He pulled up the driver's seat to let Ben out, and Ben stumbled to the ground, missing the step, Trey grabbing hold of him. "Time for you to get some understanding, feel some power. You're a dad soon, dude." Trey shook him by both shoulders. "A dad." His voice sounded friendly enough, but he didn't smile. He just stared with his lips tight and his eyes red-rimmed, almost bloody. Deciding. He had a deciding look. Then Trey let go, cuffed his jean jacket, and went around to the back of the truck. Ben tried to see across the hood, catch Deandra's eyes, flash her a what-the-fuck look, but she was leaning down into the cab, pulling another baggie out from under her seat, groaning with one hand on her belly, like it was really hard to bend down half a foot. She came back up, hand crooked on her back now, and began digging around in the baggie. It was filled with foil gum wrappers, and she pulled three out. "Give it," Trey said, stuck two in his pocket, and unwrapped the third. "You and Ben can share."
"I don't want to share," Deandra whined. "I feel like shit. I need a whole one."
Trey gave a frustrated sigh, then shot one packet out at her, muttering, "Jesus Christ."
"What is that stuff?" Ben finally asked.
He could feel that warm trickle on his head, knew he was bleeding again. His headache was worse too, throbbing behind his left eye, down his neck, and into his shoulder, like an infection moving through his system. He rubbed at his neck. It felt like someone had tied a garden hose in knots and planted it under his skin.
"It's devil rush, dude. Ever had it?"
Trey poured the powdery stuff into one palm and leaned into it like a horse to sugar, then made a shotgun of a snort, threw his head back, stumbled a few steps backward, then looked at them like they had no business being there. A ring of deep orange covered his nose and mouth.
"The fuck you looking at, Ben Day?"
Trey's pupils jittered back and forth like he was following an invisible hummingbird. Deandra sucked up hers in the same greedy, animal snort, then fell straight to her knees laughing. It was a laugh of joy for 3 seconds, and then it turned into a wet, choking laugh, the kind you give when you just can't believe your shitty luck. That kind of laugh. She was crying and cackling, lowering herself onto the snow, laughing on her hands and knees, and then she was throwing up nacho cheese and thick strings of spaghetti that almost smelled good in their sweet vomit sauce. Deandra still had a string of spaghetti hanging out of her mouth when she looked up. The strand hung there for a second before she realized, then she pulled it out, Ben picturing the noodle still half down her throat, tickling its way up. She flung it to the ground, still crying on all fours, and as she looked at it, she started in on that scrunched-faced baby ball his sisters did when they got hurt. The end-of-the-world cry.
"Deandra, you okay, Ben?"
he started. She lurched forward and threw the rest up near Ben's feet. He got out of the way of the spatter and stood, watching Deandra on all fours, weeping.
"My daddy's going to kill me,"
she wailed again, sweat wetting the roots of her hair. Her face twisted as she glared down at her belly.
"He will kill me!"
Trey was only looking at Ben, tuning Deandra out entirely, and he made a gesture with a single finger, a flick that meant Ben should stop stalling and take the devil rush. He put his nose down near it and smelled old erasers and baking soda.
"What is it, like cocaine?"
"Like battery acid for your brain. Pour it in."
"Man, I already feel like crap. I don't know if I need this stuff. I'm fucking hungry, man."
"For what's about to happen, you need it. Do it."
Deandra was giggling again, her face white under the beige foundation. A nacho crumble was floating toward Ben's foot on a runny pink stream. He moved, then turned away from them toward the watching cows, poured the powder into his palm, and let it start to float off on the wind. When it was down to a pile the size of a quarter, he sniffed it, loud and fake as they had, and still only took part of it up his nose. Which was good, because it shot straight into his brain, harsh as chlorine, but with even more sting, and he could picture it crackling out like tree branches, burning the veins in his head. It felt like his whole bloodstream had turned to hot tin. Even his wrist bones started to ache. His bowels shifted like a snake waking up, and for a second he thought he might crap himself, but instead he sneezed up some beer, lost his sight, and tumbled onto the ground, his head throbbing open, the blood pulsing down his face with each squeeze. He felt like he could run 80 miles an hour, and that he should, that if he stayed where he was, his chest would crack open and some demon would bust out, shake Ben's blood off its wings, crook its head at the idea of being stuck in this world, and fly into the sky, trying to get back to hell. And then as soon as he thought he needed a gun, shoot himself and end this, came a big air bubble of relief that spread through him, soothed his veins, and he realized he'd been holding his breath and started gulping air, and then felt fucking good. Fucking smart to breathe air, that's what it was. He felt he was expanding, turning big, undeniable. Like no matter what he did, it was the right choice. Yes, sir, sure thing. Like he could line up all the sky full of choices he'd need to make in the coming months, and he could shoot them down like carnival animals and win something big. Huge. Hooray for Ben, up on everyone's shoulders so the world can fucking cheer.
"What the hell is this stuff?"
he asked. His voice sounded solid, like a heavy door with a good swing to it. Trey ignored him, glanced at Deandra, pulling herself up from the ground, her fingers red from where she'd buried them in the ice. He seemed to sneer at her without realizing it. Then he fished around in the back of his pickup, swung back around with an axe, glowing as blue as the snow. He handed it out toward Ben, blade first, and Ben let his arms go tight to his sides.
No, 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 no. Can't make me take it.
Like he was a kid being asked to hold a crying newborn.
No, 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 no. Take it.
Ben gripped it, cold in his hands, rusty stains on the point.
Is this blood?
Trey gave one of his lazy side glances, didn't bother answering.
Oh, I want the axe,
Deandra squealed. She made a skip over to the truck, Ben wondering if they were fucking with him as usual.
Too heavy for you. Take the hunting knife.
Deandra twisted back and forth in her coat, the fur trim of the hood bouncing up and down.
I don't want the knife. Too small. Give Ben the knife. He hunts.
Then Ben gets this too, Trey said,
and handed him a 10-gauge shotgun.
Let me have the gun then. I'll take that, Deandra said.
Trey took her hand, opened it, folded the bowie inside of it.
It's sharp, so don't fuck around.
But wasn't that just what they were doing? Fucking around?
Ben Gay, wipe your face. You're dripping blood everywhere.
Axe in one hand, shotgun in the other, Ben wiped his face on his sleeve and came away woozy. More blood kept coming. It was in his hair now, and smeared over one eye. He was freezing and remembered that's what happened when you bled to death. You got cold. And then he realized it would be crazy not to be cold, him in his thin little Deandra jacket, his entire torso prickly with goose pimples. Trey pulled out a massive pickaxe last, its blade so sharp it looked like an icicle sliver. He slung it over his shoulder, a man going to work. Deandra was still pouting at the knife, and Trey snapped at her.
You want to say it? He said. You want to do it?
She pulled out of the sulk, nodded briskly, set her knife in the middle of the accidental circle they were standing in. But no, not accidental, because then Trey put his pickaxe next to the bowie and motioned for Ben to do the same, gave him this impatient gesture like a parent whose kid has forgotten to say grace. So Ben did, piled the shotgun and the axe on top, that pile of glinting, sharp metal making Ben's heart pound. Suddenly, Deandra and Trey were grabbing his hands, Trey's grip tight and hot, Deandra's limp, sticky, as they stood in a circle around their weapons. The moonlight was making everything glow. Deandra's face looked like a mask, all hollows and hills, and when she thrust her chin up toward the moon, between her open mouth and the pile of metal, Ben got a hard-on and didn't care. His brain was sizzling somewhere in the back of his consciousness. His brain was literally frying, and then Deandra was chanting.
To Satan we bring you sacrifice. We bring you pain and blood and fear and rage, the basis of human life. We honor you, Dark One. In your power we become more powerful. In your exaltation we become exalted.
Ben didn't know what the words meant. Deandra prayed all the time. She prayed in church like normal people. But she also prayed to goddesses and geodes and crystals and shit. She was always looking for help.
We're going to make your baby a fucking warrior tonight, Dio, Trey said.
They disbanded then, everyone picking up their weapons, silently marching into the field, the snow making a rubbery sound as they stomped through it, breaking its top crust. Ben's feet felt literally frozen, separate things, unnaturally attached to him. But it didn't really matter. Not this. Not much of anything mattered. They were in a bubble tonight. Nothing had any consequence. And as long as he could stay in the bubble, everything would be okay.
Which one, Deandra? Trey said as they came to a stop.
Four Herefords stood nearby, unmoving in the snow, finding the humans unworrying. Limited imaginations. Deandra paused, pointed a finger around, a silent eeny, meeny, miny, mo, and then rested on the largest one, a bull with a grotesque, furry dribble of cock slung down toward the snow. Deandra pulled her mouth back in a vampire smile, her canine teeth bared, and Ben waited for a fight cry, a charge. But instead she just strode. Three long, snow-clumsy strides up to the bull, who took only one step away before she jammed the hunting knife through its throat. It's happening, Ben thought. Here it is, happening. A sacrifice to Satan. The bowl was leaking blood like oil, dark and thick, glug, glug. And then all of a sudden it twitched, the vein shifted or something, and blood sprayed out, an angry mist, coating them in specks of red, their faces, their clothes, their hair. Deandra was screaming now, finally, as if this first part had been underwater, and she burst through suddenly, her cries echoing off the ice. She stabbed at the bull's face, chopped its left eye into a mess, the eye rolling back into its head, slick and blood black. The bull stumbled in the snow, clumsy and confused, sounding like a sleeper awakened to an emergency, frightened but dull. Blood spatters all over its white curly fur. Trey raised his blade toward the moon, made a whooping cry, slung his chopper hard underhand, and buried it in the animal's gut. The thing's hindquarters gave out for a second, then it bucked up, started to trot drunkenly. The other cows had widened the circle around it, like kids at a fight, watching and lowing. "Get him!" Deandra yelled. Trey took big, loping hops through the snow, his legs kicked high as if he were dancing, his axe circling through the air. He was singing to Satan, and then, mid-lyric, he brought the axe down on the animal's back, breaking its spinal cord, dropping it to the snow. Ben didn't move. To move meant he could partake, and he didn't want to. He didn't want to feel that bull's flesh breaking open under him. Not because it was wrong, but because it might feel too good to him. Like the weed, where the first time he took a drag, he knew he'd never quit it. Like the smoke found a place inside him that had been left hollow just for the smoke, and had curled up in there. There might be a space, too, for this. The feel of killing. There might be an empty spot just waiting to be filled.
"Come on, Ben, don't puss out on us now," Trey called, heaving gulps of air after a third, a fourth, a fifth axe chop.
The bull was on its side, moaning now, a mournful, otherworldly mewing, the way a dinosaur in a tar pit might have sounded. Dreadful, dying, stunned.
"Come on, Ben, get your kill! You can't come and just stand," Deandra yelled,
making standing sound like the most worthless thing in the world. The bull looked up at her from the ground, and she started stabbing it in the jowls, a quick, efficient jab, her teeth gritted, screaming,
"Fucker!"
as she stabbed it again and again, one hand on the knife, the other covering her belly.
"Hold off, Dee," Trey said, and leaned against his axe. "Do it, Ben. Do it, or I'll fucking hurt you, man."
His eyes still had the druggy glow, and Ben wished he'd taken more of the devil rush. Wished he wasn't jammed in this between state, where he had some logic, but no fear.
"This is your chance, dude. Be a man. You got the mother of your child here watching. She's been doing her share. Don't be a scared, dickless boy all your life, letting people push you around, letting people bring up the fear in you. I used to be like you, man, and I don't ever want to go back there again. Shit on. Look how your own dad treated you. Like a limp dick. But you get what you deserve, you know? I think you know that."
Ben breathed frozen air into his lungs, the words seeping under his skin, getting him angrier and angrier. He wasn't a coward.
"Come on, Ben! Do it! Just go!"
Deandra needled at him. The bull was only panting now, blood pouring out of dozens of wounds, a red pond in the snow.
"You need to let the rage out, man. It's the key to power. You're so scared, man. Aren't you tired of being scared?"
The bull on the ground was so pathetic now, so quickly undone, that Ben found it disgusting. His hands clenched tighter and tighter around the axe. The thing needed to be killed, put out of its misery. And then he raised the blade over his head, high and heavy, and brought it down on the bull's skull. A shocking crack. A final cry from the animal, and shards of brain and bone shattered outward, and then his muscles felt so good stretching and working in his shoulders, man's work, that he brought the axe down again, the skull breaking in half, the bull finally dead now, a last jitter of its two front legs, and then he moved his attention to the midsection, where he could really do damage, up and down, Ben sending bone flying and bubbly bits of entrails.
"Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you,"
he was screaming, his shoulders impossibly tight, like they were rubber-banded back, his jaw buzzing, his fists shaking, his cock hard and straining, like his whole body might pop in an orgasm.
"Swing batter!"
He was about to go for the shotgun when his arms gave out. He was done, the anger leaking from his body, and he didn't feel power at all. He felt embarrassed, the way he felt after he jacked off to a dirty magazine, limp and wrong and foolish. Deandra busted out laughing.
"He's pretty tough when the thing's practically dead," she said.
"I killed it, didn't I?" They were all panting, spent, their faces covered in blood, except where they'd each wiped at their eyes, leaving them peering out, raccoon style.
"You sure this is the guy that got you pregnant, Deandra?" Trey said. "You sure he can get it up? No wonder he's better with little girls."
Ben dropped the axe, started walking toward the car, thinking it was time to go home now, thinking this was his mom's fault, her being such a bitch this morning. If she hadn't freaked out about his hair, he'd be at home tonight, clean and warm under his blanket, the sound of his sisters just outside his door, the TV humming down the hall, his mom dumping out some stew for dinner. Instead, he was here, being mocked as usual, having done his best to prove himself, and coming up short, as always. The truth finally out. This night would always be here to point at. The night Ben couldn't get his kill. But now he knew how the violence felt, and he wanted more. In a few days, he'd be thinking about it. The bell rung, can't unring it. And so he'd be thinking about it, obsessing about it, the killing. But he doubted Trey and Deandra would take him out again, and he would be too pitiful, too scared, as always, to do it alone. He stood with his back to them, then raised the shotgun to his shoulder, swung back around, cocking the hammer, his finger on the trigger. Bam! He imagined the air ringing, the shotgun butting against his shoulder like a friend with a punch, saying good job, and him cracking the gun, popping another shell in, walking deeper into the field, swing that gun back up, and bam! He pictured his ears ringing and the air smelling smoky, and Trey and Deandra for once saying nothing, as he stood in a field of corpses.
Libby Day, now. Lyle had left 9 messages in the days I'd gone Oklahoma incommunicado, their tone wildly varying. He'd started with some sort of impression of an anxious dowager, I think, talking through a pinched nose, inquiring about my welfare, some comedy bit. Then he'd moved on to annoyed, stern, urgent, and panicked before swinging back to goofy on the last message. "If you don't call me back, I'm coming. And hell's coming with me," he screamed. Then added, "I don't know if you've ever seen Tombstone." I have. But it was a bad Kurt Russell. I phoned him, gave him my address, an unusual choice for me, told him he could come over if he wanted. In the background, I could hear a woman's voice asking who it was, telling Lyle to ask me something. "Just ask her. Don't be silly. Just ask her." And Lyle trying to scramble off the phone. Maybe Magda wanting a report on Runner? I'd give it. I wanted to talk, in fact, or I would get in bed and not get out for another 10 years. While I waited, I prepped my hair. I'd bought a dye kit at the grocery store on the way home from seeing Ben. I had planned on grabbing my usual blonde, platinum pizzazz. But in the end, I left with scarlet sass, a redhead smiling saucily at me on the box. Less upkeep, yes. I always preferred less upkeep. And I'd been thinking about changing back since Ben remarked how much I looked like my mother, the idea irresistible to me. Me somehow thinking I'd show up outside Diane's trailer, looking like Patty Day resurrected, and maybe that would be enough to get me inside. Goddamn Diane, not phoning me back. I packed a crimson glob of chemicals on my head, the smell like something gently burning. 14 minutes more to go when the doorbell rang. Lyle. Of course he was early. He rushed in, talking about how relieved he was to hear from me, then pulled back.
What is that, a perm?
I'm going back to red.
Oh, good. I mean, it's nice. The natural.
In the 13 minutes I had left, I told Lyle about Runner and about Deandra.
Okay,
Lyle said, looking to his left, aiming his ear at me, his listening, thinking stance.
So, according to Ben, Ben had gone back home that night, briefly, got in a fight with your mom, and then left again. And he knows nothing after that.
According to Ben, I nodded.
And according to Runner, what? Either Trey killed your family because Runner owed him, or Ben and Trey killed your family and Deandra in some sort of devil worship ritual. What did Runner say about his girlfriend recanting his alibi?
He said she could suck his dick. I got a rinse. He trailed me to the bathroom, filling the doorway, hands on each side of the frame, thinking.
Can I say something specific about that night, Libby?
I was bent over the tub, water dribbling out of the attachable nozzle. No showers in over there that way. But I paused.
I mean, doesn't it seem like it could have been two people? Somehow? Michelle's murder was just... Your mom and Debbie were like, hunted down almost. But Michelle dies in her bed, covers pulled up. They have different feels to them, I think.
I gave a small, stiff shrug, the dark place images swirling, and stuck my head under the spray where I couldn't hear anymore. The water started running toward the drain, burgundy. While I was still upside down, I could feel Lyle grab the attachment from me and pat at the back of my head. Clumsy, unromantic, just getting the job done.
You still had some guck,
he yelled over the water, then handed the hose back to me. I rose up and he reached toward me, grabbed an earlobe and swiped.
Some red stuff on your earlobe, too. That probably wouldn't go with earrings.
My ears aren't pierced, I said, combing out my hair, trying to figure out if the color was right, trying very hard not to think about my family's corpses, to concentrate just on hair.
Really? I thought every girl had pierced ears.
Never had anyone to do them for me. He watched me brush, a sad sack smile on his face.
How's the hair?
He asked. We'll find out when it dries. We sat back down on the soggy living room couch, each of us at opposite ends, listening to the rain get going again.
Trey Tipano had an alibi, he finally said.
Well, Runner had an alibi, too. Apparently, they're easy to come by.
Maybe you should go ahead and officially recant your testimony?
I'm not recanting anything until I'm sure, I said. I'm just not. The rain got harder, made me crave a fireplace.
You know that the farm went into foreclosure the day of the murders, right?
Lyle said. I nodded. It was one of 40,000 new facts I had in my brain, thanks to Lyle and all his files.
Doesn't that seem like something?
He said.
Doesn't this all seem too weird? Like we're missing something obvious? A girl tells a lie. A farm goes under. A gambler's bets are called in by a devil-worshipping bookie. All in the same day.
And every single person in this case lies, is lying, did lie.
What should we do now?
He asked. Watch some TV, I said. I flipped on the TV, plomped back down, pulling out a strand of half-dry hair to check the color. It looked pure, shocking red. But then that was the color of my hair.
You know, Libby, I'm proud of you, with all this,
Lyle said, stiffly.
Ah, don't say that. It sounds so fucking patronizing. It drives me crazy when you do that. I wasn't being patronizing, he said, his voice going high.
Just crazy.
I wasn't. I mean, it's cool to get to know you.
Yeah, what a thrill. I'm so worthwhile. You are. Lyle, just don't, okay? I folded a knee up under my chin and we both sat pretending to watch a cooking show, the host's voice too bright. Libby? I rolled my eyes over at him, slowly, as if it pained me. Can I tell you something? What? You ever hear about those wildfires near San Bernardino back in 1999? They destroyed like 80 homes and about 90,000 acres. I shrugged. Seemed like California was always on fire. I was the kid who set that fire. Not on purpose. Or at least, I didn't mean for it to get out of control. What? I was only a kid, 12 years old. And I wasn't a firebug or anything, but I'd ended up with a lighter, a cigarette lighter. I can't even remember why I had it. But I liked flicking it, you know? And I was hiking back in the hills behind my development, bored, and the trail was just covered with old grasses and stuff. And I was walking along, flicking the lighter, just seeing if I could get the tops of the weeds to catch. They had these fuzzy tips. Foxtail. And I turned around, and they'd all caught on fire. There were about 20 mini fires behind me, like torches. And it was during the Santa Anas, so the tops started blowing away, and they'd land and catch another patch on fire, and then blow another 100 feet, and then it wasn't just small fires here and there. It was a big fire. That fast? Yeah. In just those seconds, it was a fire. I still remember that feeling. Like, maybe for one moment, I might have been able to undo it, but no. Now it was like, it was all beyond me, and it was going to be bad. I just remember thinking I was in the middle of something that I'd never get over. And I haven't. It's hard to be that young and realize something like that. I was supposed to say something now. You didn't mean for it to happen, Lyle. You were a kid with some horrible, weird luck. Well, I know, but that's why I, you know, identify with you. Not so long ago, I started learning about your story, and I thought, she might be like me. She might know that feeling of something getting completely beyond your control. You know, with your testimony and what happened after. I know. I've never told anyone that story. I mean, voluntarily. I just figured you... I know. Thanks. If I were a better person, I'd have put my hand on Lyle's then, given him a warm squeeze, let him know I understood, I empathized. But I wasn't. The thanks was hard enough. Buck hopped up on the sofa between us, willing me to feed him. So, what are you doing this weekend? Lyle said, picking at the edge of the sofa, the same spot where Chrissy had put her face in her hands and wept. Nothing? So my mom wanted me to see if you wanted to come to this birthday party she's having for me, he said. Just like dinner or something, just friends. People had birthday parties, grown-ups did. But the way Lyle said it made me think of clowns and balloons and maybe a pony ride. Oh, you probably want to just enjoy the time with your friends, I said, looking around the room for the remote control. Right. That's why I invited you. Oh. Okay, then. I was trying not to smile. That would be too awful. And I was trying to figure out what to say, ask him how old he'd be. 12 years old in 1999 means, good God, 22? But a news bulletin blared in. Lizette Stevens was found murdered this morning, her body at the bottom of a ravine. She'd been dead for months.
Patty Day, January 3, 1985, 12:01 a.m. Broke down Kinnicky. She really wouldn't miss this town, especially in winter, when the roads got pitted and the mere act of driving rearranged your skeleton. By the time Patty got home, the girls were full down out asleep. Debbie and Michelle splayed out on the floor, as always, Debbie using a stuffed animal as a pillow, Michelle still sucking her pan on the floor, diary under an arm, looking comfortable despite a leg bent beneath her. Libby was in bed, in her tight little ball, fists up at her chin, grinding her teeth. Patty thought about tucking each one in properly, but didn't want to risk waking them. Instead, she blew a kiss and shut the door. The smell of urine hitting her. Patty realizing she'd forgotten to change the sheets after all. The bag of clothing was completely burned. There were only the tiniest scraps floating at the bottom of the fireplace. One white cotton square with a purple star sat in the ashes, defiant. Patty put on another log just to make sure, tossed the scrap right on the fire. Then she phoned Diane and asked her to come over extra early tomorrow, dawn, so they could look for Ben again. "I can come over now if you want the company."
"No. I'm about to climb in bed," Patty said. "Thanks for the envelope. The money."
"I'm already phoning around about lawyers. Should have a good list by tomorrow." "Don't worry. Ben will come home. He's probably panicked, staying overnight at someone's. He'll show up."
"I love him so much, Diane," Patty started and caught herself. "Have a good sleep."
"I'll bring some cereal when I come. I forgot to bring cereal today."
Cereal.
It was so normal it felt like a gut punch. Patty headed to her room. She wanted to sit and think, to ponder, get deep. The urge was intense, but she fought it. It was like trying to fight a sneeze. She finally poured herself two fingers of bourbon and put on her thick layers of sleeping clothes, thinking, time was over. Might as well try and relax. She thought she'd cry, the relief of it all, but she didn't. She got into bed and looked at the cracked ceiling and thought, I don't need to worry about the roof caving in anymore. She wouldn't have to look at that broken screen window near her bed, thinking year after year she should fix it. She wouldn't need to worry about the morning when she'd wake up and need coffee and find that the coffee maker finally croaked. She didn't have to worry about commodity prices or operating costs or interest rates or the credit card runner had taken in her name and overcharged on so she could never pay it off. She'd never see the Cates family again, at least not for a long time. She didn't have to worry about Runner and his peacock strut, or the trial, or the fancy, slick-haired lawyer with the thick gold watch who'd say soothing things and judge her. She didn't have to stay up at night worrying about what the lawyer was telling his wife, lying in their goose-down bed, him telling her stories about the day mother and her dirty brood. She didn't have to worry about Ben going to prison. She didn't have to worry about not being able to take care of him, or any of them. Things were going to change. For the first time in a decade, she wasn't worrying. And so she didn't cry. Somewhere after one, Libby banged the door open and sleepwalked into bed with her. And Patty turned over and kissed her goodnight and said, I love you. And was happy she could say that aloud to one of her kids. And Libby was asleep so fast, Patty wondered if she even heard.
Libby Day, now. I woke up feeling like I dreamt about my mom. I was craving her weird hamburgers we always made fun of, filled with carrots and turnip bits and sometimes old fruit, which was strange since I don't eat meat, but I wanted one of those burgers. I was considering how one actually cooks hamburgers when Lyle phoned with his pitch. Just one more. That's what Lyle kept saying. Just one more person I should talk to, and if nothing came of it, I could give up. Trey Tipano. I should look up Trey Tipano. When I said it'd be too hard to track him down, Lyle recited his address. It was easy. He has his own business. Tipano Feed, Lyle said. I wanted to say nice work back to him. How easy would that have been? But I didn't. Lyle said Magda's women would give me $500 to talk to Trey.
I'd have done it for free, but I took the money anyway. I knew I would keep going like this, actually, that I couldn't stop until I found some sort of answer. Ben knew, I was sure of that now. Ben knew something, but he wasn't saying. So keep going. I remember watching a very sensible love expert on TV once. The advice, don't be discouraged. Every relationship you have is a failure, until you find the right one. That's how I felt about this miserable quest. Every person I talked to would let me down, until I found the one person who could help me figure out that night. Lyle was coming with me to Tipano Feed, partly because he wanted to see what Trey Tipano was like, and partly, I think, because he was nervous about the guy. I don't really trust devil worshippers. Tipano Feed was just east of Manhattan, Kansas, somewhere in a squat of farmland wedged between several new suburbs. The developments were blank and clean. They looked as fake as the Western souvenir shops back in Lidgerwood, a place where people only pretended to live. To my left, the boxy houses eventually gave way to an emerald lagoon of grass, a golf course, brand new and small. In the cold morning rain, a few men remained on the fairway, twisted and tilted as they swung their clubs, looking like flags of yellow and pink against the green. Then, just as quickly as the fake houses and the fake grass and the pastel-shirted men appeared, they were gone, and I was looking at a field of pretty brown Jersey cows, staring at me, expectant. I stared back. Cows are the few animals that really seem to see you. I stared so hard I missed the big old brick building labeled Tipano Feed and Farm Supply, Lyle tapping my shoulder, Libby, Libby, Libby. I hit the brakes on my car and hydroplaned a good 50 feet, that soaring feeling reminding me of Runner letting me loose after spinning me. I backed up wildly and swerved into the gravel parking lot. Only one other car was parked in front of the store, the whole place looking worn. The cement grooves between the bricks were filled with muck, and the kids' merry-go-round near the front door, quarter a ride, was missing its seats. As I walked up the wide wooden steps that spanned the front, the neon lights in the windows blinked on. We got llamas! Odd words to see in neon. A tin sign reading, 7.5% dust, dangled from one of the building posts. What's pharaoh quail? Lyle said as we hit the top step. A bell on the door jangled as I opened it, and we walked into a room colder than the outside. The air conditioner was blasting, as was a sound system, playing cacophonous jazz, the soundtrack to a brain seizure. Behind a long counter, rifles were locked in a glimmering cabinet, the glass enticing as a pond surface. Rows and rows of fertilizer and pellets, pickaxes, soil, and saddles stretched to the back of the store. Against the far wall was a wire cage holding a pack of unblinking bunnies. World's dumbest pet, I thought. Who would want an animal that sat, quivered, and shat everywhere? They say you can litter box train them, but they lie. Don't, you know, I started saying to Lyle, who was snapping his head around, shifting into his oblivious inquisitor mode, you know, don't, I won't. The crazy-making jazz continued as Lyle called out a hello. I could not see a single employee, nor customer for that matter, but then it was mid-morning on a rainy Tuesday. Between the music and the sun-baked lighting from the ruthless fluorescent lamps, I felt stoned. Then I could make out movement, someone in the far back, bending and stooping in one of the aisles, and I started walking toward the figure. The man was dark, muscled, with thick black hair and a ponytail. He reared up when he saw us. Oh, dang, he said, flinching. He stared at us, then at the door, as if he'd forgotten he was open for business. I didn't hear you all come in. Probably because of the music, Lyle yelled, pointing up at the ceiling. Too loud for you? Probably right. Hold on. He disappeared toward the back office, and suddenly the music was gone. Better? Now, what can I help you with? He leaned against a seed bag, gave us a look that said we'd better be worth his turning down the music. I'm looking for Trey Tipano, I said. Is he the guy who owns this store? I am. I do. I'm Trey. What can I do you for?
He had a tense energy, bounced on the balls of his feet, tucked his lips into his teeth. He was intensely good-looking, with a face that blinked young, old, depending on the angle. Well, I didn't know. His name floated in my head like an incantation, but what to do next? Ask him if he'd been a bookie? If he knew Deandra? Accuse him of murder? It's about my brother.
Ben.
Yeah, I said, surprised. Trey Tipano smiled a cold, crocodile smile.
Yeah, took me a second, but I recognized you. The red hair, I guess, and the same face. You're the one who lived, right, Debbie?
Libby.
Right. And who are you?
I'm just her friend, Lyle offered. I could feel him willing himself to stop talking, not pull a repeat of the Chrissy Cates interview.
Trey began straightening the shelves, readjusting bottles of deer off, poorly pretending to be occupied, like reading a book upside down.
You knew my dad, too?
Runner? Everyone knew Runner.
Runner mentioned your name the last time I saw him. He swung back his ponytail.
Yeah? Did he pass on?
No, he lives down in Oklahoma. He seems to think you were somehow involved that night, that maybe you could shed some light on what happened with the murders.
Right. That old man is crazy. Always has been.
He said you were like a bookie or something back then.
Yep.
And you were into devil worship.
Yep.
He said these things with the faded blue jean tone of a reformed addict, that vibe of broken-in peace.
So that's true? Lyle said, then looked at me guiltily. Yep, and Runner owed me money. A lot of money. Still does, I guess. But it doesn't mean I know what happened in your house that night. I've been through all this back 10 years ago.
More like 25. Trey needled his eyebrows.
Wow, I guess so,
he said, still seeming unconvinced, his face twisted as he added up the years.
Did you know Ben? I persisted. A little, not really.
Your name just keeps coming up a lot.
I got a catchy name, he shrugged. Look, back then, Kinnicky was racist as hell. Indians they did not like. I got blamed for a lot of shit I didn't do. This was before Dances with Wolves, you know what I'm saying? It was just BTI all the time out in BFE.
What?
BTI, blame the Indian. I admit it, I was a shit. I was not a good guy. But after that night, what happened to your family, it was like, it freaked me out. I got clean. Well, not right after, but a year or so later. Stopped drugs, stopped believing in the devil. It was harder to stop believing in the devil.
You really believed in the devil? Lyle said.
He shrugged. Sure, you gotta believe in something, right? Everyone has their thing.
I don't, I thought.
It's like you believe you have the power of Satan in you, so you have the power of Satan in you, Trey said. But that was a long time ago.
What about Deandra Wurzner? I said. He paused, turned away from us, walked over to the bunnies, started stroking one through the wire with his index finger.
Where are you going with this, Deb, Libby?
I'm trying to track down Deandra Wurzner. I heard she was pregnant with Ben's baby at the time of the murders and that she disappeared after. Some people say she was last seen with you and Ben.
Ah, shit, Deandra. I always knew that girl would bite me in the ass sooner or later.
He grinned wide this time.
Man, Deandra. I have no clue where Deandra is. She was always running off, though. Always making up drama. She'd run away, her parents would make a big deal, she'd come home, they'd all play house for a little. Then her parents would be assholes. They neglected the shit out of her. And she'd need the drama, start some shit, run away, whatever. Total soap opera. I guess she finally ran away, decided it wasn't worth coming home. I mean, you try the white pages?
She's listed as a missing person, Lyle said. Looked at me again to see if I minded the interruption. I didn't.
Oh, she's fine, Trey said. My guess is she's living somewhere under one of her crazy-ass names.
Crazy names, I said.